Hello, thank you for coming. Thank you for coming to our Writing for the Web workshop. I'm delighted to see such a large turnout. So this is the first of what we had optimistically named our Lunch and Learn series until we discovered that you actually can't eat in the room, so I guess we're going to have to rename it Starve and Learn or something. But and we will be having a second one in mid-May on how to use the Channels tool, which is the events and announcements tool that you may be using. So we're developing a new interface for that and want to try to let people know some of the possibilities of how you can really use it to communicate effectively. Today, however, we're going to look at writing for the web, and I have Mark, who is a web communications officer in public affairs, and Barbara, sitting at the end of the table, who is a web content producer in Content and Collaboration Solutions. My name is Susan Murley, and I'm the Director of Strategic Communications in Public Affairs at McGill. So if you have any questions, please feel free to yell them out over the course of the presentation, or you can ask at the end. I'm going to be giving a quick overview of just writing generally and some tips in terms of how to write well. Mark is going to do some writing for the web specifically, and Barbara will take us through how people read on the web. So we'll start, and the first thing I'd like to say is that in terms of writing well, first thing you can do is not to write. First thing you can do is just to stop and take some time to think. And it's something that I know it's really hard to do because people, we're in a rush, we're trying to get something up quickly, but really it helps. I mean, it's the best thing that you can do to improve your writing. So take the time and think, okay, who are my audiences? You know, am I writing to students? Am I writing to undergraduate students? Am I writing to graduate students, faculty, a general public, a whole mix of these people? And then this is going to help you try to put yourself in their place. To avoid what, there's this wonderful book that's called Made to Stick. And they talk about the curse of knowledge, basically, which is that once you know something, it's really, really hard to try to put yourself in the shoes of somebody that doesn't know what you know. So taking that and trying to say, okay, I'm an undergraduate student. I don't know all the terms of, you know, my unit. I don't know the jargon is one of the most valuable things that you can do. It's also important in terms of structuring the flow of information on your page as well. Now, of course, you do want to try to get the most important information up to the top of the page, and Mark will talk about that a little bit later. But always keep in mind, okay, if you're telling something to somebody, is there something they need to know first? This could be terms, or it could be a process that they had to do first or whatever, and just make sure that you've linked to that or, you know, have indicated that some way. The other thing, and this is something that I think we don't, a lot of people, you know to think of audiences, but a lot of people don't necessarily think about, well, what's the goal of your writing? What are you actually trying to do with this writing? So, you know, you gain someone to read it, and then you want them to maybe change the way that they think or do something afterwards. Or, I mean, there's usually a purpose in terms of, or at least there should be a purpose in terms of why you're writing something and posting it on the web. You're communicating with somebody for the purpose of what? So what should, ideally, what would you like your readers' next actions to be? It could be to go to another web page. It could be to fill out a form. It could be to talk to an advisor. It could be to, you know, think, hey, I didn't know that about, you know, the Faculty of Science, that they've got, you know, great green chemists there or whatever. I mean, it could be a number of different things. But think about what it is that you're trying to do, because that really helps you to focus your piece of writing. The other thing is, don't forget about the reader. So, yeah, you're defining what do I want them to do, but then you also need to think about, okay, what does the reader want out of this? And the acid test for this, something that I always ask myself no matter what I'm writing, try to think of that ideal reader, and I often try to think of, you know, get an actual person in my mind and think, well, why should they care, basically? You know, so I'm shoving this piece of writing out at them, and why should they care? What's in it for them if they're reading it? And this, I think, is a very useful thing, because, you know, readers, I think, especially maybe, you know, students, are fairly skeptical. They don't have a lot of time. You know, they're not interested in wading through a lot of stuff. So you really want to think about, okay, what's in it for them? And so as part of that, then, you need to triage the information. You need to be tough on yourself. You need to think, okay, what really is the most important thing that I'm saying here? Like, I know I've got 60,000 things that I want to say, but if, you know, somebody came up to me and said, what's this about? How would I tell them what it's about in 5 seconds or 10 seconds? And a lot of people think of this as, some people say, it's an elevator speech, basically, that if you get in the elevator with somebody and you ride up to the 10th floor, say, and you've got to tell them something, you've got to tell them what this is all about in that short elevator ride. So what would you do? And often doing that, again, really helps you to concentrate on what is your main message, what do I put up front, what do I really need to say? And I know that an academic environment is often a tough one in terms of creating good content for the web, because, you know, in an academic environment, we tend to talk a lot about detail, and it's about being very precise, and, you know, often things are longer, and, you know, as Mark will show you, that's not necessarily the best thing for the web. So I'm going to turn it over to Barbara now. Are there any questions before I do so? Okay.
Now I'm going to walk you through how people read web pages. Sorry. Off to a good start. Enter.
Hang on.
Right. Sorry about that. Okay. So when you're putting together your web materials, something that's very important for you to take into consideration is that you need to realize that people don't actually read all the content on a web page word for word. And as you can see from some of the statistics up on the screen, 16% actually read a new web page word for word. Meanwhile, 79% of users will scan the web page. So they just look at it quickly, picking out words or sentences that are of relevance to them. Furthermore, only 10% will go beyond the first screen of text. So your most important information needs to be on that first screen, because if you don't catch their attention, they won't even bother scrolling down past that first page. Also, something very important to point out is that it is approximately 25% slower to read from a monitor than reading from paper. So it's important not to simply duplicate your print materials, but to actually try to cut them down by at least 50%. Here are some findings from some eye tracking studies. For those of you who don't know, eye tracker technology records exactly where a user is looking on the screen at any given moment, and it also tracks exactly how long they're looking at any one place. So these findings show that users often skip large blocks of text because they're difficult to scan and it's almost like an information overload. Users often read in an F-shaped pattern, and as you can see from the image on the screen, this is an example of some results from an eye-tracking study, and the red areas are the parts where users spent the most time looking. So you can see it makes out an F-shape, and what this means is that they often start off by reading with a horizontal movement across the top of the screen. So this creates the top banner of the F. and then we'll go down to the next bit of content, another horizontal movement across the screen, but not quite as far this time. So this creates the lower part of the F, and then they'll do one vertical sweeping motion across the left-hand side of the text. So basically, we're just picking out the first few words of each paragraph to see if there are any relevance. The findings also show that users often focus on information that is presented in bulleted lists, because this is usually well-organized and easy to scan. Little attention is put on ads, because they're often distracting and very busy to look at. And heavily formatted areas, because these often look like ads as well. And as you can see, by the way readers read in an F-shaped pattern, information in the rightmost column is often ignored. So from this, we can summarize that users are impatient. They often won't even wait for a page to finish downloading before they move on. They'll click on the first promising link that they see, and they don't want to be bogged down with information that gets in their way to find what they're really looking for. As you've seen, they don't like to read. They'll scan the page quickly, looking for what they want. And they look for clues to help them do what they want to do, such as links that stand out to them, highlighted words, headers. And they want to browse successfully and easily. So they want to feel as though the web content provider understands them and is trying to provide them with the information that they're looking for. And now I'll pass it on to Mark.
Okay, I'll take you through some general tips and guidelines for writing on the web. I want to specify as well before we start that this is for a particular kind of web writing, the kind of web writing that you'll find on most McGill web pages, which is to say websites and web pages that are meant to provide details, phone numbers, information, instructions on how to register, that sort of thing. This is not necessarily the kind of writing you want to do on, say, a magazine site where people might go for enjoyment and they're really interested in what they're reading. This is really, it's true though. this is really focused on pages that are meant to get you from point A to point B and give you clear instructions on how to do a certain task or find information that you need. So what that kind of visitor wants on this kind of site is quite simply the facts. So that means that we need to resist the urge whenever possible to sort of get into flowery sort of welcome messages and we're really delighted that you're on our web page and that sort of thing. Clear, concise information as well. As Barbara mentioned, people on the web don't tend to read, they tend to skim. So it's all the more vital, even more than it is in print, that information be expressed clearly and in as few words as possible. Minimal clicking is important as well. People don't like to spend a lot of time on the web. It's harder to read. It's harder on your eyes than it is in print. And the idea is that you want to get to the information that you're looking for with as few clicks as possible and as little time as possible in one single obvious path that will take you there clearly. So often on many websites, even some McGill websites, there will be options in a menu, say, that sort of overlap, but you're not sure what they mean, and there's no clear single obvious path to get to the information that you need. So, one of the good techniques, I guess, for cutting down on some of that stuff that people don't necessarily want to read and making your page sort of more friendly to visitors is hacking and slashing as much as you possibly can. If there's any way you can remove text, unnecessary words, unnecessary information, even if it's information that is important in a certain sense but that doesn't necessarily need to be on the website or on that particular page, you can try to cut it out. And I'll read the original version of this text as well, and then as well as the edited version out to you. You can see sort of what we've done with it. And I want to emphasize that the one on the top isn't bad writing. It's not necessarily bad writing. And a lot of the writing on the web isn't necessarily bad. It's just that it's not necessarily as good as it could be. So it says, many opportunities for involvement exist within our unit, academic affairs, and the rest of the university. Below is a list of some of the programs where your involvement can and will make a difference. The success of these programs relies on the generosity, energy, and time of many student volunteers. You can help by sharing what you've learned through your own university experiences by signing up with any one, two, or all of the major programs described below. That's 79 words, And it's sort of a roundabout way of saying that there are opportunities at the university to volunteer, and here are some of them. So the edited version below is below a partial list of volunteerism opportunities at McGill. Oh, sorry, below is a partial list of volunteerism opportunities at McGill. Many groups rely on the generosity and energy of students like you, and we invite you to sign up today. It's clear, it's simple, it's to the point, and it's easily skimmed. On the next version, we've actually put the important information, or sort of the essential information, in red text. So the things that you really, really need to know are in red. 78 words, it's about the same length as the last one, and it goes, a network of 20 emergency phones covers the anonymous U West Side campus. We've obviously changed the names to protect the innocent. These phones are located outside buildings, along walkways, and in structures at various locations where they're most visible and recognizable. The box-type phones can be used to contact anonymous U security and are equipped with a blue light that flashes once the phone is activated to make them visible. To find out more information about the emergency telephones, including their locations, please visit the website and it lists the URL. And again, it's not necessarily bad. It's just not necessarily the best way of presenting that information or the clearest, most concise way of doing that. So we've cut that down to 31 words, less than half of what it was before, and we took out what we felt were the important information bits in that paragraph. So what we thought was important was that there are 20 emergency phones that cover the West Side campus. They're recognizable. They can be used to contact security. They have a blue light so that you can see them. Visit the website if you want to find out more. That's what we felt was important. So the edited version ended up being just 31 words, again, less than half of what it was before. And it goes, the 20 emergency phones on Anonymous's West Side campus provide instant contact with security. Flashing blue lights make them easily recognizable in the dark. For details, visit the security website. Notice also that we haven't included the entire URL. It's in the word website, but you don't necessarily need to clutter up the page with things like that. They're just sort of little tricks for cutting down on the number of words and on the amount of space it takes up on the page. I won't ask you to read all that, and I'm certainly not going to read it out myself, but this is really just to give you an idea of sort of what text looks like and how it isn't necessarily inviting to read or even to skim when it's huge, huge blocks of text. The original text on the left is quite blocky. They're large paragraphs, long lists, not a lot of headers. And what we've done on the right is we've sort of edited it to make it a little bit more breathable. We've used bullets, and there are bullets in the left-hand side as well, but you can't really see them. They're kind of up here, and they're dashes, but the text isn't indented. So the bullets aren't immediately obvious, and they don't pull out the individual items like bullets are meant to do. We've also shortened the paragraphs by breaking the text into several different paragraphs, so sort of one idea per paragraph. We've used a horizontal line with the HR tag up there to sort of separate the intro paragraph from the main meat of the page. And we've used headings of different sizes. So here we've used H2 headings to sort of break things up a little bit. And if you want to skim it, you can sort of clearly go from item to item and see where you are. We could have used H1s and H3s as well to break things down even further. And in terms of how to write and where to put your information on the page, many of you probably are already familiar with the inverted pyramid. It was forced down my throat for 3 years at journalism school, so I know it pretty well. Essentially, you want to get the most important information out first, the least important information out last. So the top of the page should be perhaps an introductory paragraph explaining what's on the page, why it's important. After that is the meat of the page. Really, this is the main reason that the visitor came to the page, is the content that you put there. And all the way at the bottom goes less important information that you still feel that you need to communicate, that needs to be available, that needs to be somewhere, but isn't necessarily something that's important enough for people to go to or to choose to go to. This is another one that is a bit of an issue on the McGill site. It can be tempting to duplicate content, to copy information from one site onto another. So let's say you're looking for information on fees or guidelines or regulations of some kind. You put that on your website. Well, that's okay, but there are a few difficulties with it. The main one being that it's difficult and time-consuming to update. First, you have to remember it's there. So you have to know that when, say, the fee schedule is updated, you have to go, oh, okay, well, I need to get in touch with whoever handles fees to find out what they are now. Not only that, but users will see that, and they may also see what's on the other site, and they'll say, hey, I've got two different numbers. I don't know how much it costs to attend McGill. So they'll get confused. And not only that, but it clutters up the McGill website more than it needs to be. So you have lots of information that's duplicated in many different places, and it just sort of clutters things up and takes up more pages. You've created now pages that people will navigate and get lost on, and it's more confusing than it needs to be. This is another one. This is actually a pet peeve of mine. Little tiny pet peeve of mine is text styles. And there's definitely a use for them. There's a time and a place. But I find italicized text very hard to read, especially if it's in large chunks, large blocks. There's a use for it if you're sometimes citing calls for it. There are other uses. But in general, if you want to emphasize text, sometimes you can do that with bullets or headers and that with formatting better than you can with changing the style of the text. I find bold text somewhat irritating as well, especially when half the text is bold. So now what's emphasized has sort of been de-emphasized, and you don't really know what the important part is anymore. Which is not to say, again, that there's no use for them, but just use them sparingly. Also, try to avoid capitalized text. At least on the internet, capitalized text is shouting, and there's generally no need to shout. If there's an emergency announcement or something like that, it may be warranted. Same thing with exclamation marks. One, sometimes okay. Six together, probably not okay. There's no need for that. And you really, what you're telling the user is that you want to scream this in their faces as loudly as you possibly can. And even if it's important, there's sometimes better ways to emphasize that. So I guess we'll move from writing content now to sort of organizing it and how to present it on the page. Menus are really the backbone of navigation for McGill, for McGill sites and for most sites. But sometimes they get really quite long and they're very difficult to navigate. And if you have 20 items in a list, as is the case with a couple of sites, sometimes it's hard to tell what's what. And sometimes there's absolutely no getting around it. There's just that much information there. There's no better way to group it. And sometimes there is. So the idea is that you really want to group similar items together if you possibly can. You want to try to limit menus to about 8 to 10 items as an upper limit, if at all possible. And again, it's not always possible, but if you can, given the content that you need to present, it's ideal. And also, and this is an important one, try to choose page names that will appear in the menu that really give information about the pages about the information that they contain. So I've used the example here of Science Minis. A lot of people don't know what Science Minis are if they're not McGill students, if they're not, maybe they're alums, or maybe they're just members of the general community. So Science Minis might not be a great name for a page, because people might not know what that is. And I don't know that that page exists, and I'm not pointing fingers, and I just pulled an idea out. So public science lectures might be a better way to go. Similarly, workshops and conferences and programs and all that sort of thing, often there are pages that are titled with the name of that workshop or the name of that conference, which may be a really neat name for a conference, but it may not be immediately obvious what it's all about. Page anchors are a fantastic way of actually accomplishing a number of things. For those of you who don't know, a page anchor is essentially a link within a page. So if you look at the example on the right, you have a list of items on that page, secondhand shops, computer stores, bookstores, etc. And if you click on, say, computer stores, it'll take you all the way down to the bottom to computer stores over there. The page will shift up, and that'll be the main thing on your page. And this accomplishes a number of things, and it's not just to decrease scrolling. It also tells the visitor that there's other information on the page that's not immediately obvious here. Without that list at the top, you may not know that there are bookstores and other furniture stores and other things like that on the page, because it's hard to see and you wouldn't be able to see it. Aside from making long lists much easier to navigate, it also eliminates the need for more subpages. So whereas before we may have had sort of one landing page, say, for where to shop, with a whole bunch of subpages underneath for furniture stores and bookstores, etc., this gives us a way of having a lot of content on one page that normally would be difficult to navigate, but because we've put in the page anchors, it's okay. This one speaks more to sort of general breathability, again, than actual writing. But often you need to present information that just really doesn't look very attractive, long lists, stuff that can be dense. And there are a few ways of making that a little bit more breathable. One that I like is to put in thumbnails wherever you can. Here's an example of a page that could have been just a really long, boring list of bullets. And it's still not the most exciting page in the world, but it's a little bit better than it might otherwise have been. We pulled out the Green Book, which is the Handbook of Student Rights and Responsibilities. And we pulled that out as the most important document on the page. So we thought, hey, we'll put that right up at the top. We'll have a thumbnail beside it, a little sort of explanatory blurb, which we don't want to have for all of them because it would be a little bit long otherwise, given that you have a dozen or so documents on the page. But we'll emphasize that. And we'll put a little sort of horizontal line underneath it, and we'll say this is sort of the main thing on the page. The things underneath, we've separated with not only the horizontal line, but also headers. So you'll have the green book, and then you'll have sort of other policies and publications, things that are a little bit less important. Also, when you have a really, really dense page like this, sometimes it's worth it, even if you want to advertise events and news announcements and other things, to consider keeping the left and right-hand columns empty, because this creates a lot of white space on the page, so you can see, and it's just a little bit less overwhelming than it would have been if you had all sorts of stuff down the left and right-hand sides and a long list down the middle of the page as well. And I'll invite Barbara back to wrap up.
So the bottom line, so this is basically just to summarize some of the key points that Mark covered. So in order to create effective web pages, it's important for us to be sympathetic to our users. So we can do this, and as you saw from the examples that Mark showed you, that's important to cut down your web rating into digestible chunks. Don't use unnecessary words, and keep sentences and paragraphs brief and to the point. Good ways to help enhance your content: use headers and subheaders. Make sure they're clearly labeled so that you don't risk any problems with misinterpretation. Bulleted lists, because they're easy to scan. Short one-topic paragraphs, also because they're easy to scan. Descriptive links and highlighted keywords, because these will stand out to the user. Now, it's important to convince your users that your site is worthy of their time, and you can do this in two ways: by including easy-to-find information and relevant information. Next, make it easy for users to find additional relevant information so that they stay on your page as opposed to being forced to go somewhere else to look for their content. We have a list of web writing resources. I won't go through them since you'll have access to this presentation, which will be on our blog, which is actually up already, and there will also be a list of other additional resources there for you to take a look at. And our blog, which I just mentioned, which is up, and the address is blogs.mcgill.ca/web-editors. And this presentation will be up as of 1:30 today.
Yeah.
blogs.mcgill.ca/web-editors.
We decided we'd start the blog and just provide a place to post some additional resources for people to, have a forum that they can ask questions, or if they see a really neat site or, a great article on how to write or how to, new software for manipulating images or whatever you want, that there's a place that you can share that with everyone else. We can post some things. So, for example, the next Lunch and Learn seminar, post some additional resources. And here, for example, I just put up an entry because we're interested in basically redoing some of our magazine sites. So, Headway, which is McGill's research magazine, for example. And we're taking a look around at some online magazine sites, and so I thought, well, you know, what do you guys like out there? I mean, I bet you're you know, out looking at websites all the time, and what do you consider to be a really good magazine site? So if you want to, you know, write in and tell me some of your favorite sites and why, I mean, I'd really appreciate that. And so it seems like this is a way that we can maybe just connect a little bit more and share some resources. Now, I guess first of all, before we move to, we're going to do a little exercise here and give you guys the opportunity to take some text and cut it down. But before that, are there any questions that you have? Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so just for those of you in case you couldn't hear it, Lauren, who's from Graduate and Postdoctoral Studies, was asking if we had developed yet a tool to syndicate content. So basically, rather than just having to put a link, to develop a tool whereby you can create content centrally and push it out to a number of different sites. So we are looking at tools like this. There's one that's been created, and in a way you can see that, for example, events and announcements do that automatically. You create an event and announcement in the database, and then people can pick it up for many different sites around the university. So we're doing something with advising, a new advising site that we're going to be launching soon. There's going to be a central site and then advising subsites on faculty web pages. And so we're creating some centralized content that can be put out, that basically can be pushed out to each of the faculty web pages, so it only has to be updated once. And then faculties can customize other pages on their site. So you're sort of building on some central, consistent information and then customizing it to the faculties. So we're looking at doing some more of that, building some more tools. And I think there's going to be the Content Collaboration Solutions, which does the web design and the content management system, is looking at actually getting a new content management system and then being able to do that. So we don't have that widely available yet, Lauren, to answer your question, but we are looking to develop that in the future. So in the meantime, we're recommending links, but we're hoping to be able to syndicate more broadly, because particularly in this environment, it makes a lot of sense. Hi.
Hi. I'm Erica Douglas in science. I agree that you advise making it easy to find additional information while keeping people on your own web page. But if it's additional information, it's a link somewhere else. How do you really do that?
Well, it depends, really. I mean, so I guess one of the things is you want to make it clear to people where you're taking them. So if you are taking them, say, off of the science site onto, you know, whatever, an central advising site, it's good practice to let them know so that they know where they're going. So, you know, so you could say, so for more information, please visit the, you know, university advising site, so that they understand that they're going to leave science. I think that, you know, there are times when people are going to need to go off of the page, and you just got to keep the user's needs in mind. But certainly it'd be good to try to organize your information so that everything that they need to pick up, you know, from the science website, they can do first and then go off. But it's, I guess, the point of that was trying to say, well, don't make things so difficult to find that they're just going, well, I don't know if it's here, but I'm going to try someplace else because I can't find it. Yeah. Okay. Anything else? Yes.
One of the points that was brought up a few years ago was the difficulty in using the search pages, mm-hmm. because usually a lot of irrelevant stuff comes up, And I know that departments, anyone establishing sites, encouraged to label it properly. Is there an ongoing effort to do that? Because I most of my efforts lately have been pretty futile to find anything using the search engine.
Yeah, we're actually looking at doing a workshop on keywords and how to use them effectively. And we're trying as well that if we type in a search and we notice it's not bringing us to the most relevant results, say, you know, particularly like the home page of a site that you would expect. So say once we launch the new advising site, we will test if you type in advising, you know, we want the we'll force the advising sites to come up. It's certainly something that if you see if you're you're typing in a search, and we highly recommend that you go in and you try to use some of the keywords that you think your students or audience may use. Type them in. If the results are the most logical, like you have say the primary information about this at the university and you think that this should come up first, feel free to contact Carl, who would the correct person be to basically say, could we force, for example, the Days Hotel site to come up when you type in business? Who would be the best person to contact on that?
Just recommend people contacting Jackal.
Okay, so that's Jane Jackal in Content and Collaboration Solutions. If you don't know her address or whatever, or her name, you can. Mm-hmm.
I've just been glad, as my colleague Mark just pointed out, that we are trying to direct people to contact CCS through ICS. And so it's best for
them to support.
Go through the support desk.
Okay.
And
so what was the general support email then? No. ICS Service Desk. Okay.
Okay.
So ICS Service Desk is the right person to do. We are going to be taking a look at the search logs and seeing what we can do with that, because we've done some one-on-one interviews with students about how they find information on the web. And one of the things that we're always thinking about, well, how are our navigation systems and everything, and then we realize that in fact everyone just types their keyword into the search box, and that really what we need to be doing is spending a lot more time on that. So it's on the radar. We're not there yet, but it's on the radar.
So. A quick note before the next question. We'd only printed up 100 copies of that little handout, and we're very pleasantly surprised to see that we've run out, because it means lots of people come out. But we'll ask, if you don't have one, if you wouldn't mind sharing with someone who does. And if you don't have a pen, let us know as well, and we'll hand you one. Well, sorry about that.
The suggestion to break down pages for a time, like each one is switched, each one is not a time that we should be using, because that's reserved at the top.
Okay.
Two types of H2 and H3, and H3 is identical to bold text. In the new templates, which are coming eventually, will there be a few more options for us to use an H3 that doesn't look just like bold, maybe to use boxes and use highlighting to do things that are not going to be blink linked, but to give us a little more option to identify, okay, this is small print text, this is another heading.
Okay, certainly. Yep, sure.
How do you do this? Okay. Don't use boxes. If you need more than two headline sizes, edit your text and put the information on another page.
Okay.
Really only have a tenth of a second that they look at the page before they make a decision.
Okay.
Bang! I see it. I'm off.
I see a discussion topic for the blog. So can I suggest that maybe we just leave it there and we go to the, because this is a writing for the web seminar, and we go to our little exercise, and then if people have further suggestions, comments, want to engage in debates like that, then go to the blog, go for it, and we can have a good discussion there. Okay? So, okay, here is the here is a piece of web text that is a bit bloated, I think you could say.
and of course we have anonymized it, so the Anonymous University Department of Public Safety is pleased to be able to offer access control and security system advisory services to members of the ISU community. These services are provided by Captain Rob Bowers. The service is available, range from providing suggestions and input prior to the development of new construction projects and building remodeling projects to providing suggestions and ideas for the effective and efficient use of automated security systems in office and laboratory environments. Captain Bowers is available to meet with interested groups during the planning stages of any new development. Captain Bowers is also willing to serve as a member of your RFP review committee. The services are designed to provide assistance and advice to the project planners, taking into account potential and known security or access control related concerns. I'm not going to go on, but you get the idea. So,
it's not a McGill site.
We're going to. So, I invite you to take a few moments, read it, think about it, and ask yourself, what's the text trying to say? You know, what are the main messages? And maybe as well, like Mark did previously in the presentation, just highlight what you think the key phrases are, because that's a good way to start to break down content. Feel free if you want to, you know, pair up and discuss it with your neighbor, if you'd like to do that. And so we'll give you maybe 3 minutes or so to take a look.
Thank you.
Try to take a bit of time and work with this thing. So, what do you think? What's the main message that this text is trying to say? Not very well at the moment, but what's it trying to say? Anyone? Go ahead.
Very much like the Bell Canada signs, call us before you dig.
Okay. Yes. Okay. Anyone else? That's concise. This is good.
Mm-hmm. We exist. Here's what we can do.
Okay. Yes. Okay. Anyone else?
That we offer services to help groups that make informed decisions.
Okay. And so, what are the important services? It's not easy, is it? So what? Maybe let's go through. What are the keywords here? If you went through and used Mark's technique of sort of highlighting the key phrases, the stuff that you want to keep, basically that you know you absolutely want to keep, what would those things be?
Advisory services to members.
Okay. Okay. What else?
Well, we need to know that it's about access control and security systems. That comes up many times and only at once.
Okay. Any idea what that is? Me neither. So that's something, yeah. So that's something that you'd want to, you know, explain, probably. So again, that's an example of you know, put yourself inside the mind of your reader and don't use jargon. Yep.
It's based on principles of crime prevention.
Okay.
Yeah.
Where? Okay, so you see, there we are. Okay, principles of crime prevention through environmental design. Does anyone have any idea what this office actually does? And I'm actually not being sarcastic there. I'm actually just sitting here trying to figure it out. Like,
the services offered are kind of in the text somewhere, but you need to put the services in and list them in bullet form.
Okay.
So, suggestions and input for development of new construction projects.
Okay.
Building remodeling projects.
Okay. What?
It's the keyless entry.
I think so.
The key was entry.
I think it's magnetic swipe card.
Okay.
You see. Because they emphasize that you have, it's important to security can be enhanced without projecting an outward appearance of the need for extra security. And the keyless entry can suggest that there is a need for extra security.
I thought we didn't have extra security with big guns and uniforms.
Oh, maybe.
Or grills on windows.
But when actually I called our own security service, they told me that that is one thing they always ask people to consider. Don't make it, don't scream, this is a secure area or you have anything to hide or protect.
Steal from us.
Yeah.
Okay. So we probably, with this, it's this would probably need the poor person who has to edit this to actually go back to the person and say, so, what do you really do? Just, you know, I don't know if any of you watch
what's his name, Mike Rowe, Dirty Jobs.
Yeah.
Well, often what he says, you know, when he's trying to get somebody to explain something that's often quite complicated to him, and he says, speak to me as if I were a small, stupid child. And sometimes I sort of think we have to have the courage to actually say that to people. It's like, no, just please, you know, speak to me as if you were, you know, telling your 14-year-old kid what it is that this is all about. And, yeah.
I think the problem is we have no idea what audience was originally written for.
Mm-hmm.
I get the idea that it's written for the building and planning mission of this university.
Okay.
Because they're talking about prior to the building of this, the development of that.
Mm-hmm.
So if you ended up on this site, or if I ended up on this site, I would not, because obviously you want to be here. But maybe a title saying that the audience, like, in the title or header of the page, mm-hmm. who the audience is, so that once I get there, folks have something.
Yes.
Why do I have to read through all this to find out at the bottom that,
okay.
Oh, I'm not building a building. You can't just get me here.
And if the audience isn't the building people, then you've got to think this. Yeah, okay. Okay, anything else? Yep.
Right, and she said the essential message of this is put the mic on. The message was call us before we dig, and then they launch into this elaborate explanation of why they're important, why they do what they do is important, and that should be dealt with by providing links, probably with full explanations of, you know, the security design and everything else that they're talking about there.
Mm-hmm.
They don't, you know, they're insecure. They really want you to call them. It's, but probably just a stern message at the beginning, better than providing all this.
So basically, we don't know from this really what we're supposed to do after we've read it is part of the problem, right?
But we know it's internal. We do know it's for
mm-hmm.
internal consumption.
Mm-hmm.
And we do know that this guy, Captain Bowers, is an important dude.
So this is, Mark took a stab at this, not really, I mean, you know, knowing too much about it. I mean, I think obviously ideally you'd want to be going back to the person and saying, okay, really, who are you talking to, what do you want them to do, and what really is this about? Mark took a stab at it, and it's certainly clearer. Whether it's actually accurate, I think we don't exactly know unless we've talked with the person. But at least this is, you know, there's probably not a huge amount of essential information that's been lost. So I think, I'm just looking here, it's actually 1:31, so I think we've used up our time. So if you have any further questions or comments, then please, I invite you to either you can email me directly or write into the blog. Okay? Thank you.